Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for Rocky Mountain Miners at RockyMountainMiners.com. Ever wanted to destroy the Federal Reserve System? Now's your chance. New free market currencies are making our fake government money a thing of the past, and good riddance. If you want to mine new bitcoins and litecoins into circulation, you need a computer set up to crack the codes to the new coins. Get the prospector from RockyMountainMiners.com. It's ready to do the work right out of the box. Crack the equations, spend the money. Use promo code Scott Horton Show and save $100. Get all the info and get the prospector at RockyMountainMiners.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Next up, our guest today is Sheldon Richmond. He's vice president of the Future of Freedom Foundation and editor of their journal, The Future of Freedom. He keeps his own blog at SheldonRichmond.com. Free Association is the name of the blog. Welcome back to the show, Sheldon. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and I'm always happy to be here.
Well, good times. I'm glad to have you back. So listen, you've got a very important piece on Afghanistan today, which we've got to talk about. It's the U.S. isn't leaving Afghanistan. But first, I wanted to ask you just a little bit about the Iran talks, and more specifically about Israel's policy of openly and blatantly trying to interfere and prevent an American peace deal, and even going so far as to send Naftali Bennett to encourage American Jews to oppose this peace deal on behalf of a foreign power that they, most of them, have absolutely no connection to whatsoever. Have you ever seen such a sight in your life?
Well, I really can't recall seeing such a scene. It's pretty flagrant, as you say. And Netanyahu himself, the prime minister, has called on all the Jews of the world to oppose this negotiation and this deal, which, although it has not, you know, even the tentative language hadn't been released, somehow I guess Netanyahu knew what was in it and was condemning it.
Is he a secret agent of neo-Nazis and he's trying to make Jews look bad, or what? Right? Like, every Nazi in America today is celebrating that. See? Just like we told you. Fifth column.
Well, you know, as I said on Facebook, nobody can parody Netanyahu as well as Netanyahu.
Yeah, got that right.
It's impossible to do it.
And is it working, do you think, or not?
Well, you know, I don't know. It's putting pressure on members of Congress. Obama, while I have no confidence in Obama, I don't trust him at all. He at least is telling members of Congress to shut up about new sanctions. I think he's just trying to, you know, burn the candle at both ends. But whether it's working, I'm sure the Israelis who are doing this are emboldening Graham and McCain and Menendez and the others that do not want to see any kind of agreement and who want to press even greater sanctions on Iran as a way to bring about a regime change and an end to the Islamic Republic. That's what they want.
Yeah. Now, here's my thing, is treason is defined in the Constitution as an overt act on behalf of a foreign enemy. And as much as I dislike Israel, it's not an enemy state of America. So I don't know if that means that Bob Corker and the rest of these guys are guilty of treason, but what do you call it? Because it's certainly criminal for them to be representing the interests of a foreign power against their own country like this, and at a time like this especially, isn't it?
Well, I'm not much interested in charges of treason, because that can cut many different ways. I think it's,
well, these guys have all sworn an oath, so the Lysander, yeah, Spooner principle of I don't owe you any allegiance doesn't apply to them.
I think it's just enough for us to spell out what it is they're doing. It's in the American people's interest to have peace and a rapprochement with Iran. There's no reason why the American people and the Iranian people shouldn't be friends and trade and all the rest. And here is a group of Americans who are being aided by another, you know, people from a different country, officials from the government of another country, namely Israel, pushing to make sure there is no rapprochement with Iran. Let's just spell all that out and let people see it for what it is.
There you go. And you know what? I'm not a criminal prosecutor or anything, so I think I can still call it treason, even if it's not exactly, you know, the legal definition of treason. It's certainly the old world definition of treason.
Well, they're acting contrary to the interests of the American people. And I suppose, you know, the theory is that it's congressmen, members of Congress, they are acting on behalf of the American people. But here they are acting, in an adversarial way toward the American people. So I don't mind putting it that way.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. Let's talk about Afghanistan. Nobody wants to talk about Afghanistan at all anymore, really, but it's the most violent of all of America's foreign policies to this day. And there's breaking news along these lines, Sheldon. I don't think I want to hear it, but go ahead.
It's also the longest war, and it's going to be a lot longer than people have been led to believe, because the people in the Obama administration have been suggesting it's going to end. The U.S. Presence will end at the end of next year, right? At the December 2014, the troops were supposed to come out. But now it's come out, and it's not a secret, because Kerry's now announcing that they have an agreement with the Karzai government in Afghanistan, that the U.S. Will remain. And I like the way the draft agreement put it. NBC got a hold of the draft agreement, put it up on its website, but you can also find that in my current article at FFF.org today, called "The U.S. Isn't Leaving Afghanistan." This draft agreement says that the U.S. troops will be there through 2024 and beyond. I mean, it sounds a little like Buzz Lightyear, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, to infinity and beyond. It reminds me of Toy Story. So why do you bother to say 2024 if it's and beyond? Just say we're there indefinitely.
Right.
Now, this agreement can be terminated by either side, but it requires 2 years' notice. So at the soonest, it's 2026, right? Because 2024 with 2 years' notice, 2026. But that's assuming one party or the other wants to terminate. So the U.S. will be there. We don't know how many troops. The Afghan officials gave NBC one estimate, 10 to 15,000. The U.S., the government source, gave NBC a different estimate. I think, 6 to 8,000? Who knows?
But it doesn't say in the paperwork, though. That's up in the air?
It does not say, at least in the draft that's posted by NBC. It doesn't say. And so, but the U.S. will continue to be there, training, supporting, arming, and paying for the Afghan military, and being a guarantor, and the United States will continue to be a guarantor of its sovereignty. And if any war crimes are committed by U.S. personnel, civilian or military, they will not be held liable under Afghan law or turned over to international tribunals, but will instead be turned over to American officials. And the big thing is, as far as we know, certainly this was in a later draft that the New York Times wrote about, that Rod Nordland wrote about yesterday, that the U.S. will continue to do raids on Afghan homes. This was something Karzai didn't want, because the Afghan people despise it. They despise America for conducting these raids, especially nighttime raids, breaking into people's homes. Karzai, in order to not alienate the people, has condemned those raids over the years and said they should not be done by the U.S. forces. But nevertheless, it looks like the U.S. is going to be able to continue to do it anyway under this extended agreement.
Man, well, okay, a few things here. First of all, this strategic partnership agreement, is that the same thing as the status of forces agreement? They just changed the term or what?
I suppose it is. Yeah, I think the status of forces agreement sounded like it was about the same thing, right? Under what circumstances or terms can the U.S. maintain military troops there, yes.
But in other words, this is a treaty, only they just made up a new name for it so they don't have to deliver it before the U.S. Senate to ratify.
I believe that's right. I don't believe they have to put this. In fact, I saw another piece on NBC just today saying that a group of senators are trying to get Obama to have to come to Congress for permission to keep troops there. This is a group of senators that include Wyden, Manchin, Rand Paul, and maybe others that are they're drafting a. They are engaged now in an effort to compel, I suppose, or require Obama to come to Congress or the Senate for permission to keep the troops there. So that's a good sign, and who knows if it'll get anywhere. It's being led apparently by Senator Merkley of Oregon.
That is interesting. I guess I'm especially surprised to hear Rand Paul in there, because he's on the record for staying beyond 2024 or beyond 2014 for counterterrorism and training, as he called it, and the exact words of Obama.
Well, this is an amendment that's going to be attached to the annual defense spending bill. This will be interesting because we'll see what happens. We'll see whether Obama can get them to remove it or whether they're going to stick by it and push it.
All right. So did you see this thing in Rolling Stone about the A-Team killings?
I did not.
Oh, okay. Well, you got to take a look at that. But you've heard of this, where the translator is accused of carrying out most of the killings and tortures, but the Special Forces guys were there all along and knew all about it kind of thing. The story broke early this year, I think. Mm-hmm. And anyway, they got a really good write-up for it. But one of the in the Rolling Stone right now, one of the things in there is he talks about how as they withdraw the regular army, that leaves Special Forces behind. So whatever numbers of thousands, fives or tens or whatever, which is, I think, what you're getting at when you talk about the permission in here to continue on with the night raids, that's the strategy of the Special Forces guys, is one at a time going to houses in the middle of the night like the Soviets.
Right.
And committing the acts that you referred to there turn the entire population against us. But so, you know what I'm wondering, though, is what about force protection? Because it sounds like these guys are going to end up with a Dien Bien Phu kind of thing or Fall of Saigon kind of thing where they're just completely surrounded and they don't have enough of themselves to protect themselves, you know?
It doesn't sound good, that's right. And so, maybe all these estimates we've heard are underestimates. By the way, NATO apparently, according to the reporting, NATO will also have some presence there. So that will be in addition to the however many thousands the U.S. U.S. put there. I think one thing that's really funny that your listeners probably will get a kick out of it, when Jay Carney, the White House press secretary, was asked about this, he said, quote, "I think when it comes to this president keeping his word and ending the war in Iraq, winding down and ending the war in Afghanistan, the public knows he's keeping his commitment."
Yeah, winding down, you know.
I mean, look, you know, I know it's the job of a White House press secretary to be a liar. I mean, that's what his job is. He gets paid. He's a professional liar. I know Jay Carney came from the world of journalism, where maybe we shouldn't expect more from a former reporter, but being a former reporter myself, I guess I do. It just seems pathetic that a guy can stand up in front of people, former colleagues of his, and make such a ridiculous statement. We were told we were getting out at the end of 2014. Now we're not going to get out until the end of 2026 if the agreement is terminated by one of the parties. So, in other words, we could be there forever. And here's Carney saying, the president has kept his word.
Right. That's one of the benefits of tripling the number of troops in the country. You can reduce it right back down to where you started and pretend like, you know, it's a big accomplishment that you're drawing down the forces that you tripled.
That's right.
People don't even remember that. I actually was arguing with somebody, a friend of mine, about Obama. I said, well, you know, at least he hasn't done any real big land invasions. Yeah, except for Afghanistan, right? Yeah, we all just overlooked that. And let's just pretend that there was no surge, that was just the drone war or some little old thing there.
Well, look, and his fans, and I count Rachel Maddow in that group, continued to say that he got us out of Iraq, although he tried his darndest to keep us in Iraq. It's only that Maliki wouldn't take the deal and didn't want to do what Karzai's willing to do, namely let the U.S. personnel, when they commit war crimes, remain under the jurisdiction of the U.S. government. Maliki wouldn't do that, and so Obama wouldn't keep troops there under other terms.
You know, what's funny about that, too, is they even talk about that in the regular newspapers now. I mean, not just the facts, but even calling out the president's spin on it. That, like, well, really, Bush signed that deal, and Maliki forced America to stick to it. Basically, the Americans couldn't say anything about it.
So here, when he does get his way, Obama, namely, we see that he's not going to take out the troops. We are for the foreseeable future, we, meaning the U.S. government, is the guarantor of the sovereignty and safety and security of Afghanistan. So what? So the American taxpayer is on the hook. The $17 trillion debt, be damned. That's the way things are. That's how this president is know, is treating the American people. Mm-hmm. So people will continue to die. Americans will continue to kill and die. And Americans, you know, America will continue to be hated because we're, you know, we're an imperialist aggressor. So instead of being able to live normally with the rest of the world, we're going to be in this same mode. And Mr. Obama, winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, that's just fine with him.
Well, you know, unlike Obama, Karzai has to get this thing ratified by somebody, and they've got this lawyer Jirga there that's supposed to vote on it. He says he'll go with their decision. Makes me wonder, well, a couple things.
Right.
First of all, the Taliban suicide bombed the site of the lawyer Jirga just the other day, making a statement about, we can reach you if we feel like it kind of thing. But then also, it makes me wonder whether Karzai is actually pulling the same stunt that Maliki pulled, which was to tell Obama, oh, yeah, yeah, no, I know, I want you to stay too. As many bases as you want, yeah, whatever, whatever. Hey, wait right here, and let me go talk to the guys and see if I can convince them, you know? And then he played Bush like that throughout 08 to get the sofa that he wanted. And then I think he played Obama that same way for the first 3 years or first 2 years of the Obama administration, and certainly throughout 2011 up until the end where, as you just said, he told him at the end, no deal, beat it. But I wonder whether maybe that's the same game that Karzai is playing here. He's gone pretty far down the road, but maybe the lawyer Jirga is meant to fail. And I'm just desperate for one last route out of Afghanistan at this point, Sheldon. Forgive me.
No, I share your frustration. What will it take to have even Obama's fans see him for what he is? It's just they are revealing themselves to be this, these slavish, worshipers who will accept anything from this guy.
Yeah, well, the ones who are left respecting him anyway. All right, let me ask you what I asked John Glazer the other day, Sheldon. It's funny how little this comes up on the show. What the hell does the American government care about occupying Afghanistan anyway?
I heard your interview with John, and John is usually right. I don't know for sure. I think it's a lot of things, as he suggested. A lot of people want to jump to the economic or financial interests that some people have in the natural resources of Afghanistan. I know there's talk about pipelines. But I'm not going to rule that out. That sort of thing is always at work in foreign policy. I'm also thinking now of your interview with Andrew Coburn about how foreign policy is really just somebody's domestic policy. But John also made the point that there's just sort of this vested interest in empire and reluctance to concede that this has been a failed mission, failed operation. I mean, look, after 12 years. Afghanistan is very, very violent. The president is hardly even the mayor of the capital, the real mayor of the capital. And he's corrupt. He's authoritarian. If the U.S. is planning to stay so long, it's a confession of failure, because if the U.S. pulls out, the government will likely fall. I mean, and Al-Qaeda, which is supposedly the reason the U.S. really went in, has simply spawned affiliates which are now all over the place, including Africa and Syria and Iraq and the Arabian Peninsula. So by any standard, this 12-year war has been a dismal failure. The U.S. has lost. And it's as if Obama's saying, well, look, give us at least 10 more years and beyond to get it right. And I promise you, we'll get it right. That's what it sounds like this agreement's all about. They can't just confess, look, this is a mess. We never should have gotten into it. We've lost. We can't make it better. We're getting out. So I don't think we can discount that as a motive for this, along with the other thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You point out in your article, too, that, well, they spread Al-Qaeda all over the place, you know, that's the thing about it. Their stated goals, well, we got to stop Al-Qaeda. Well, you already spread them all over the world and made millions of people at least agree with them in theory, if not on tactics, by, you know, proving them quote-unquote right. Oh, you want empire, huh? We'll show you evil empire. I don't know. I mean, they say that they're there to keep the Taliban out, but they've, like you're saying, the fact that they're saying they got to stay is an admission of the fact that everybody knows that they haven't defeated the Taliban at all. In fact, I asked Ann Jones on the show whether she thought if the Americans did leave, theoretically, would the Taliban just come marching back into Kabul? And she said, look, the Taliban are in Kabul now. They're a big part of the Karzai government already. And the U.S. military might be standing around all over the place. They might be doing night raids or whatever. But they don't control the politics of Afghanistan. Nobody does it. The whole thing is a total nightmare. It's a coalition of warlords for now. But, anyway, it just seems like they don't have any stated goals left to even claim to live up to, right? They've backed off of all their stated goals, and now they just have, well, I don't know, don't want to go yet. Security, something. Drugs, maybe.
Right. Well, drugs, too. Just the prestige and just the vested interest. They're just not wanting to give it up. I mean, they have bases. They have, they have outposts, and the military industrial complex, may be reluctant to give it up. I think there can be a lot of reasons. I wouldn't point to just one single reason. But the complication with Al Qaeda is, the U.S. is against Al Qaeda, depending on where it's standing, right? So if it's in Afghanistan, the U.S. government's against it. If it's in Iraq, the U.S. government's against it. But if they cross over into Syria, suddenly the U.S. is on the same side.
Right.
You need a scorecard to keep the players straight.
I know, man. I'm reading about the war in Syria where they go, hey, look, Afghan Mujahideen helping the Al-Qaeda in Syria. Oh, man, really? You got Afghans. You know what? I'm sick and tired of fighting the Americans. I'm going to fight for them. It's easier. Let's go to Syria. you would want a night raid in your house, right?
From the standpoint of American common sense, it doesn't make any sense. If you begin to look at the various interests behind it, then it starts to make sense. But but certainly it's not in the interest of the American people in general. They get nothing out of this. It's costing them a lot. People are still getting hurt. Americans are getting hurt too. And it's insane.
Well, I know at some point there's probably reasons that we could guess at but can't even see from here, right, where some deputy assistant secretary of something is related to a guy who's helping run the opium black market out of there or whatever. So they're doing everything they can to keep us there in ways that we can't even see, right? But they just have things set up the way they want. The institutional interests that have been built up under the occupation this whole time, probably especially right, including, opiate distribution networks and that kind of stuff. All of those guys have their own levers that they can push and things that they can do. And you and I can look at the outside and criticize the whole policy, try to take it on its face and criticize that. And we can speculate about, things going on in secret. But I think we could bet that there are probably a lot of secret motives for even staying. Things that maybe aren't even government policies at all, but are just policies of certain people in government, if you know what I mean.
This is sort of the Coburn analysis. So we can go to higher profile people than the kind of people you're talking about. Maybe Obama and Kerry and Samantha Power and Susan Rice don't want a withdrawal and what will follow on their watch. So they're pushing it beyond 2016 way past 2017. And that way, when things fall apart in 2024, 2025, or whatever, they're long gone. They've written their memoirs. They're raking in their speaker fees. But no one's going to talk about them at that point.
Right. And after all, if they stay for the rest of Obama's years, it's not like the American people are going to notice, short of some catastrophe breaking out over there. So a Diem Ben Phu type mask or something. So why not? Crap, now we're out of time. Thanks, Sheldon.
My pleasure. Anytime.
That's Sheldon Richmond, everybody. FFF.org.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation. As you may already be aware, Jacob Hornberger, Sheldon Richmond, and James Bovard are awesome. They're also in every issue of The Future of Freedom, and they're joined by others of the best of the libertarian movement. People like Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Lawrence Vance, Joe Stromberg, and many more. Even me. Sign up for The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom, edited by Sheldon Richmond at fff.org/subscribe. And tell me you heard it here. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to talk to you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. In the book, Swanson explains what the revolution was, the rise of empire, and the permanent military economy, and all from a free market libertarian perspective. Jacob Hornberger, founder and president of the Future Freedom Foundation, says the book is absolutely awesome, and that Swanson's perspectives on the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis are among the best I've read. The poll numbers say that people agree on one thing. It's that America is on the wrong track. In The War State, Swanson gets to the bottom of what's ailing our society. Empire. The permanent national security bureaucracy that runs it, and the mountain of debt that has enabled our descent down this dark road. The War State could well be the book that finally brings this reality to the level of mainstream consensus. America can be saved from its government and its arms dealers. First, get the facts. Get The War State by Michael Swanson, available at your local bookseller and at Amazon.com. Or just click on the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, Scott here. Man, I had a chance to have an essay published in the book Why Peace, edited by Mark Gutman, but I didn't understand what an opportunity it was. Boy, do I regret I didn't take it. This compendium of thoughts by the greatest anti-war writers and activists of our generation will be remembered and studied long into the future. You've got to get Why Peace. You've got to read Why Peace. It features articles by Harry Brown, Robert Naiman, Fred Bronfman, Dahlia Wasfey, Richard Cummings, Karen Katowski, Butler Schaefer, Kathy Kelly, Robert Higgs, Anthony Gregory, and so many more. Why peace? Because war is the health of everything wrong with our society. Get Why Peace. Down at the bookshop or Amazon.com. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org.
Fact. The new NSA data center in Utah requires 1.7 million gallons of water every single day to operate. Billions of Fourth Amendment violations need massive computers and the water to cool them. That water is being supplied by the state of Utah. Fact. There's absolutely nothing in the Constitution which requires your state to help the feds violate your rights. Our message to Utah? Turn it off. No water equals no NSA data center. Visit offnow.org.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against our depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com.